I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the battle over telling the story of the Alamo, the old Spanish mission and battleground that sits in downtown San Antonio, is at the heart of the story of Texas, but has politics taken hold of the history, and is it trying to amplify the myths while muting the wider story of the indigenous people who lived there long before the famous battle? Kate Rogers, the former executive director of the Alamo Trust, said she had a commitment to telling the inclusive history of the Alamo, but that cost her the job. Rogers was forced to resign in 2025. She's suing to get her job back, arguing that her free speech rights were violated. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Consider supporting TPR. Throughout 2025, you relied on us for fair-minded journalism and thoughtful programming. Now, with federal funding for public media gone, your support is essential to keep TPR strong in the year ahead. Whether you make a one-time gift or become a sustaining supporter, you help ensure this service continues. Give online at tpr.org today.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. When we ask people to remember the Alamo, what are we asking people to remember about the Alamo? Of course, that battle cry comes from the 1836 siege during the Texas Revolution, but there is a lot more history at the Alamo, and all of it tells important stuff about Texas. How do we tell the entire story of the Alamo, and how did a commitment to do that, to tell the entire story, become woke and not welcomed by people like Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick? Kate Rogers is the former president and CEO of the Alamo Trust. She was forced out of that job because of her PhD dissertation that explored the benefits of telling inclusive history. And Kate Rogers joins us now. And welcome to The Source, Kate. It's great to have you.
Thanks so much, David. Thanks for having me.
And you can join the conversation. Call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Kate, tell me about how your emotional connection to the Alamo. How do your lifelong connection to the Alamo?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Texas, mostly. My dad was in the service when I was young, but I consider Corpus Christi my home. That was his hometown. I was born in Arlington, and he was a huge history buff. He was a West Point grad who served 5 tours in Vietnam. And I still have a picture that's on the wall, ironically, inside the collection center, although they've probably taken it down now, of my sister and I when we were little on one of the many trips he took us to go see the Alamo. I did not know until I started working there that I actually am a descendant. My great-grandmother, 4 times, Maria Jesus Delgado, was a descendant of one of the original Canary Island families that settled San Antonio in 1731. She was 9, and she was here during the siege of the Alamo and told what she saw in a book, it's a small book, of Tejano accounts called The Alamo Remembered. And I did not know that history until I started there, which is miraculous, I think.
So you have a deep personal connection to telling a story and protecting the Alamo.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, the thing you said about you remember coming with your dad to the Alamo. I remember just yesterday when I was walking through the Alamo, just to get a sense for things, I saw a lot of dads with their kids or families talking about the history and explaining things and kids asking questions. It seemed like they were having a real bonding experience.
Absolutely. I mean, I think families are still the number one visitor. We do get a lot, or the Alamo gets a lot of older visitors, people who have a real interest in history. But a lot of people don't really understand the full history. They don't know that it was a Spanish mission before it became a fort, or that it was actually built by the indigenous people who were part of Mission San Antonio de Valero. So there's so much opportunity to teach people about more than just the 13 days of the siege and the Battle of 1836 when they come.
So you were forced to resign. That's the language that we use when we talk about you in our news stories.
Yeah.
Is that good language?
Yeah, it was either resign or we'll fire you.
Okay, so we can say you were forced to resign. And what did they tell you? What did they specifically tell you why?
That the writings within my dissertation were quite troubling. So it was a sequence of events that happened over the course of a week. Approximately. So on Columbus Day, we posted, our communications director posted a post that had been posted the year prior, if not the year prior to that, that simply said both Happy Indigenous Peoples Day and also Happy Columbus Day, and talked about the new Indigenous Peoples Gallery inside the Future Visitor Center Museum. At that time, when we first started planning, we were still permitted to use the word indigenous. Now that is not, my understanding, is a word that we're comfortable with anymore. So that was the first thing. And right when that came out, the land commissioner, Don Buckingham, posted a letter to social media calling it woke and questioning my leadership and calling for accountability. A week later, miraculously, my dissertation came to light, and I was contacted by the lieutenant governor and then followed by the board of the Alamo Trust, saying that they found my writings quite troubling and that I was going to need to resign.
So what other word? They can't use indigenous. What word do they choose to use now?
I think that the direction right before my departure was American Indian.
Even though there were people here, indigenous, before they were American.
Yeah, so it's a complicated thing. And let me just say where the word indigenous came from, right? So over the course of the 4.5 years that I was at the Trust, we had a group that we called the Museum Planning Committee. It was several members who had come over from the Alamo Citizens Advisory Committee, which was a body prior to that appointed by the city council members. And these stakeholders that represented various groups were working with the Trust and with Gallagher and Associates, who's the program manager on the project, to flesh out a very detailed outline that then would become the narrative. So when you go into a museum and you see words on a panel on a wall or in a digital display, where do those words come from? It comes from a narrative that it normally takes months, if not years, to prepare. And so this stakeholder group had come together, and that was what the preference of the, in fact, we had an Indigenous People subcommittee, and that was the word that they preferred, which is where it came from.
Okay. And so were you told in a letter, in a conversation, that your doctoral dissertation and your views there were incompatible with a battle-centered telling of the Alamo? How did that?
Yeah, I mean, originally it was a phone call from the lieutenant governor, just expressing his concern. He said someone that cares about him had sent him my dissertation, and he obviously took offense to what I had written.
Oh, well, and that was like that having a wider view of history is.
He specifically called out the reference to historical reconciliation. It's interesting to me because the first thing I had to do when I got home that evening, because it was in the evening, I was at a reception scheduled to speak, and it was quite jarring. And when I went home that evening, I had to go find my dissertation because I couldn't remember what I had written. And anyone who has ever been involved with doctoral research knows this statement to be true. The best kind of dissertation is a done dissertation. Uh-huh. You spend so much time, months, if not years, writing this document. And once it's approved by your committee, it kind of gets put into a library somewhere, never to be heard from again. At least it's quite rare that anyone
brings it up. Until someone
does
oppositional research on you.
Well, yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a break here.
Yeah.
Kate Rogers, former president, CEO of the Alamo Trust, is here. She's taking your questions. And Dan will get you on the air when we come back. We're going to talk about the Alamo and her right to free speech. Was her right to free speech violated when she was fired from the Alamo? Call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.
Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, and David Martin Davies with us in the studio today, Kate Rogers, former president, CEO of the Alamo Trust. The Alamo Trust, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, we just heard from her, told her that he was not pleased with her dissertation, and he forced her out of her job. So what happens next? You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Dan on the phones. Dan, you're on the air.
Hello. Great show. Really interesting topic. I love the Alamo. Ma'am, I support you. I really do. I want to know what was the few sentences before you used the word that you weren't supposed to use, you know. Thank you so much.
All right. So more context about your expression in your dissertation. You were saying that we needed to do a comprehensive history telling these locations?
I wouldn't even say it was that. There were a few things that that he pointed to that he found offensive or troubling. So this is a section in a dissertation called The Role of the Researcher. This is a qualitative study. So I've seen comments online where people say, where's all the data? Well, this was not a quantitative study. It was a qualitative study. There's not a bunch of data crunched in that setting. So in a qualitative study, you, the researcher, you are the instrument. So in this section, you're supposed to describe anything that could potentially bias your findings. And so what I was writing about, and remember the audience for this is my committee, which are professors at the University of Southern California who really don't know anything about Texas politics. So I was trying to set the stage for them to understand why there's so much political volatility around the Alamo. And as part of that, I alluded to some of the things that have caused a lot of controversy, things like critical race theory and the conversations around slavery, the book Forget the Alamo. I wasn't saying I support these things or condone them. I was just laying out that these are things that are out there and cause controversy. I did mention the fact that the lieutenant governor has a very strong passion for the Alamo, but there was nothing derogatory about him or his leadership in there. The most troubling thing, I think, was I mentioned that I would like to see, personally, for me, the Alamo as a site of historical reconciliation, which just simply means that we agree, we're going to come together, we're going to, put the conflict of the past behind us, and we're going to, continue to learn from one another and move in a positive direction. That was particularly troubling. So it wasn't that I necessarily said, I'm going to say these things about the Alamo history. That wasn't it. And you have to remember, these are two pages. It's a very short section out of a 167-page document. So to your point earlier, not only did someone go to the trouble to go find my dissertation, but they also searched through it to find. And we know that there are bots out there in the world today that are culling through these types of documents and looking for things, particularly in the world of scholarship and academics, for those working in a public university in particular. It's a very troubling time, if not frightening.
Do you think that then what you wrote in your dissertation and how it was presented by Dan Patrick, that it was twisted, taken out of context, it was warped, it was turned into a weapon?
I do. I mean, I feel like, the question was, did it impair my judgment in doing my job at the Alamo? Because remember, what you write as a dissertation is as a private citizen. It didn't have anything to do with my job. So let's separate the two. Even if you don't agree with what I wrote in my dissertation, which is what this country is all about, you should be able to disagree with what I wrote. It doesn't have anything to do with my role as president and CEO at the Alamo Trust. And by all accounts, I was successful in that role, right? I had my last review from the board was this past summer. It was a very positive review. No concerns were raised at that time. In the fall, I was promoted from executive director to president and CEO. So there was no indication that my judgment was somehow clouded or I had a personal agenda that I was trying to advance, which is what I was accused of.
So you were not fired for cause, like for something that you did on the job. You were fired because of something that you wrote in your dissertation,
yes,
which is separate and apart from your job as the president and CEO of the Alamo Trust.
And it's an important distinction, right? Because a lot of people will look at this case on its surface and go, oh, you know, that's just a wrongful termination case. Texas is a right-to-work state. All of that is true. But that's not the essence of what this is about. This is about our First Amendment rights as a country. And that's being questioned all over the place right now, right? We've got all this controversy around the actions of ICE in recent days. You've got, you know, a lot of things happening within public universities, presidents being terminated.
You have news networks being targeted.
News networks. And the role of AI and bots and all of that to go find, oh, if you end up on a list. So to me, this all feels very, representative of authoritarian regimes throughout history. So look at the Great Leap Forward in China, communist Russia, the suppression of intellectual thought, of freedom of expression, is right out of the playbook of how do we control what we want here. And it just feels so fundamentally un-American.
Something that the defenders of the Alamo would not be
The defenders
cool
of the Alamo would have never. I mean, it's the tyranny was the exact thing they were fighting against, right? They were fighting for so many things, right? Religious freedom. Yes, slavery was absolutely a part of what they were fighting for, but that was more about economic freedom, right? Freedom from taxation, freedom from despotism, and rule from
religious freedom because they didn't want to have to become Catholics.
That's correct. It's all the things that have been part of the struggle for American democracy right from the very beginning, from the American Revolution through the Texas Revolution, and we're still living with it today.
Let's go to a caller. Let's go to Steve. And Steve, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say I am all for you, and I think it's a shame what happened. I used to participate in the reenactments before they were done away with. I used to fly down from New Hampshire to get killed at the Alamo every year. And I made a Bowie knife that I presented to them back in 2007, and they asked what I would like on the placard next to the knife. And I said, I want it dedicated to the Valientes in both camps who perished during the siege, because I was so tired of hearing just one-sided stuff. And I've made a number of great friends. Some of them you're probably familiar with, Jack Edmondson, who wrote the Alamo story from early history to current conflicts. And I have a huge library on Alamo things, and I thought it was very nice that you wanted to show it go well beyond those 13 days, the high holy days, as they call them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steve, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate that. So they did away with the reenactments?
So to some extent. So we still do a ceremony every year. I say we, sorry. The Alamo still does a ceremony every year on March the 6th. And quite ironically, it is a ceremony of historical reconciliation. And there are reenactors who represent the Mexican soldados as well as the Texian forces. There are words spoken representing different key figures in the battle itself. And there's a poem that's read that talks about, the need to, again, put our conflicts aside, come together and move forward in a productive way.
Well, you were there. Did they still do the reenactment of Twiggs' surrender?
No.
Okay, that was when the Civil War almost broke out at the Alamo.
Indeed. If Twig would have fought and not surrendered peacefully
to the militia, San Antonio militia.
Yeah, to McCulloch and the others, then you're right. Some people think that the first shots of the Civil War would have actually been there at the Alamo.
And Robert E. Lee was there.
Indeed.
So interesting. Let's go to another caller. Let's go to Susie. And Susie, you're on the air.
Hi. I want to say what the other caller said. I am sorry for what happened to you. You got fired for doing the right thing. This is in line with what Trump has done at the Smithsonian, at our national parks. We are whitewashing our history, sadly. And this is echoes of the novel 1984. It's echoes of fascism, I'll say the word. And so my question, and I'm so glad you have your dissertation and what other writings you have on the history of our Alamo and our history, because I'm a seventh generation Texan, and I respect the fact that Texas was not always American, not always, it was Mexico, Spanish. But my question is how long do you, because there's pendulum swings. After Trump's administration is gone and after the Abbott and those folks, how long do you think it would take to reassert our true history after all this whitewashing, not just in Texas, but across the country?
I think it's a great question.
All right, Susie, thank you for the call.
Yeah, so David, you and I have spoken too, because I'm also involved. Before I left the Alamo, I was appointed by our local representative to the State Board of Education, Marisa Perez, to serve on the content advisors group that is overseeing the rewrite of the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, the standards called the TEKS. And just to give the caller, Susie, a sense of how long, you know, this, because the Alamo Museum, say it opens in 2027, you know, it'll probably be at least a decade before any meaningful changes are made to whatever narrative is told in the new museum. There's expense to that time, et cetera. Now, as it relates to the TEKS, whatever comes out of the process that's underway now, those standards would go into effect and would be written into the curriculum and the textbooks in 2030. And so maybe it takes another decade to make any significant changes after that. So you're talking about a very long tail, if you will, to the changes that are underway now.
That is if we just allow the government to tell us our history.
Mm-hmm.
If people tell our history, then we're able to, I mean, it's our history.
It is. And I was thinking about this in preparation for a little ceremony this weekend, but history is comprised of stories. You know, that's essentially what it is. The question has always been, what stories do you tell and who is writing them? And there's always going to be inherent bias in that. It's why I feel strongly that the importance of academic scholarship, research, historians as a profession, you know, we need to respect that, because telling what is factually true based on primary sources should be the direction that we all want to see.
The North Star.
Yeah. Yes.
But they're trying to muddy that.
Well, I don't know what will happen with the Alamo narrative now, to be honest with you. But when I left, right, there were questions raised about, like, we've talked about the word indigenous, also the word colony or colonizer, you know, saying that you can't use that word anymore. That's puzzling to me, since Stephen F. Austin himself referred to it as Austin's colony. It's how it's written in the history books. It's how it was sanctioned by the Mexican government at the time. So I don't know why you would try to erase words that are part of the actual history.
All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be coming back with more conversation with Kate Rogers, former CEO president of the Alamo Trust. We have Annette on the board. Annette, we'll get you on the air when we come back from the break. If you got questions or comments about what happened with her dismissal, her forced resignation, call in, or the future of the Alamo, what's happening there, how do we tell the story, what story do we tell? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we're going to be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the Alamo, the history of the Alamo, the stewardship of the Alamo, and what's going to be happening next. Kate Rogers is with us, former president and CEO of the Alamo Trust. She was forced out of her job because of her PhD dissertation that explored the benefits of telling the entire story of a location, and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick did not like that, and so she was forced to resign. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. And Annette, you're on the air, Annette. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, David. And Ms. Rogers, thank you for this very timely and appropriate discussion. I really do appreciate this. I've been a citizen just outside of San Antonio for over 30 years. For the first maybe 10 or 15 years that my children and I lived here, every winter we would go to the Alamo because my children absolutely loved the diorama and, of course, the history that they and I had been told regarding the Alamo. Since that time, I have, in my own way, become an amateur historian regarding many, many topics, including the Alamo. What I have chosen to do as a parent and now a grandparent is to continue to educate myself regarding all avenues and aspects of a situation, whether it is the Holocaust, whether it is the Alamo, whether it is the slave trade. And in order to do that, I will continue to educate my children as best I can, and also my grandchildren especially. We are going through a hard time right now in our country. However, people like Ms. Rogers, sources like Texas Public Radio and National Public Radio and other news sources who continue to work and move forward to provide a route not only to conversation is totally important. Just one more thing. Mm-hmm. Back in the early 70s, my dad and I, while our family was stationed in Europe, mm-hmm. and I remember reading the Diary of Anne Frank and knowing that, oh my God, just next door, they were still processing the effects of the Holocaust. And that left a very big impression on me, and hence provided an avenue for myself to continue to learn about history and to make sure that both sides, or all sides, were given an equal chair at the table. It's unfortunate what the mindset currently is of those in power. However, it is up to us, we, the people, individuals like myself, Ms. Rogers, anybody else out there who is listening, to be able to say, you know what, I'm standing up. And that's what I wanted to say. So please, stand strong, stand firm, and keep stepping forward. Even if it's small steps, we must move forward. Thank you so, so much.
Annette, thank you for your call and your reaction. And I just want to say, and the Diary of Anne Frank, that book's now being banned in across the nation at some schools.
It's, like I said, it's just a really interesting time. My relationship with the truth and with history is quite complicated, which I don't think any of us would have seen coming. I just appreciate her willingness to continue to learn and to study and to instill that in her children and grandchildren, because that's really what the Alamo Museum, you know, the path we were headed down was to present the facts as we know them today and to really let the visitor decide and to wrestle with some of those tough questions that the people associated with the Alamo were facing throughout time. What I really appreciate about what Annette said was an appreciation for the nuance of history. It's complicated. Winston Churchill said it's messy, but we must study it in order to not repeat the mistakes of the past. And I think the Holocaust is a very good example of that.
One of the heritages of the Alamo is that for generations, it's been used as a square for public speech, free
yes.
speech. We saw last June when we had a No Kings protest in San Antonio, Governor Greg Abbott ordered the Texas National Guard to wall off the Alamo, basically a human wall around it, and prevented people from accessing the Alamo for expression of free speech. Do you know anything about that? Or you were there then, right?
I was there at that time. It is an interesting thing because it has been used as a place for civic discourse, particularly for residents of San Antonio for many, many years.
And when we're talking about the before the Civil War,
yes.
all sorts of debates were happening right there. And
people Vietnam.
Were, all sorts of stuff was happening.
Yes, civil rights. So the intention with the plan is to create a designated free speech zone that is somewhat to the south by Plaza de Valero, not directly in front of the church. Now, how that all gets resolved moving forward is to be determined by the current leadership. But I know it is a concern for the people of San Antonio, and I think that's the hard part I found in that role. Is, you know, trying to balance all of the many opinions and emotions that surround the Alamo. I remember the first city council meeting I attended in that job, former mayor Phil Harberger said, "It's not that we don't love the Alamo, it's that we love the Alamo too much." And I really didn't understand until I got there how deep those passions are. And people just feel so strongly about their right to protest or the use of this specific language or how the story should be told, and trying to balance all of that, you know, is complex. And I think that's what we were trying to do.
Why did the Alamo Trust buy the Minger Hotel and the Crockett Hotel?
So it was actually the General Land Office who purchased the hotels. They're actually owned by the state now via the General Land Office. And the thought was, you know, trying to enhance the overall visitor experience, which is part of, you know, the whole plan more broadly. The idea was, you know, could the Manger Hotel is in need of a renovation. It's a beautiful hotel, the oldest, some would say longest operating, at least in the state of Texas, with lots of great shared history with the Alamo. So that was one thing, is how can we elevate the experience for guests staying at the Manger. The Crockett Hotel in particular, what comes along with that is the parcel adjacent to it, which is the surface lot, which could be used for a lot of things. There was talk of creating a research institute there, perhaps a space for a library for research on the grounds, but also a parking structure, which would be an ongoing source of revenue for the Alamo. Part of what the goal of the plan was is to make sure that the Alamo is self-sustaining moving forward. So you don't have to come back and ask the state, the city, or the county for operational support in the future. And the parking structure was a part of that, of looking at the finances and the pro forma moving forward of how could you sustain the entire operation once complete.
And so these purchases had been in the plan for a long time?
Not in the plan for a long time. I think that the goal was if those properties became available, so they haven't been available for sale since the 1950s, was would there be a way to acquire them? And whatever path that might look like, it just so happened that they came up for sale while the plan was underway.
This happened after you had left the Alamo, but the dismissal of the Alamo Rangers, and now they're no longer there, and DPS agents or troopers are now Alamo security. Did you know anything about that?
I did. So there was a bill passed, not this past session, but the session prior, by the land commissioner, that would have allowed the General Land Office to create their own police force. The lieutenant governor felt that if licensed peace officers are needed at the Alamo, rather than creating a separate force under a single state agency, that should fall under the purview of Texas DPS. So we all knew the transition was coming. I had hoped that there would be a way for the two to work together so it could be additive. So the Alamo Rangers were level 3 private security, which means they could detain but not arrest. So when they had, you know, a suspect that they were...
Sometimes people damage the Alamo.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately, people do stupid things. And sometimes they do stupid things after hours, right? And so the Alamo Rangers...
Some guy named Ozzy Osbourne comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. So they would have to call SAPD in order to take action. And so the thought was, well, if DPS is there, that the Alamo Rangers could detain them, and then DPS could actually be the arresting authority. So I had hoped that the Rangers wouldn't have to lose their jobs over it, because a lot of them have been there for years.
You know, they know the story. They know what to do.
Well, to me, it was, you know, there's two different aspects to this. I mean, obviously, everybody wants the Alamo to be secure and protected from harm all hours, 24/7. But in addition to that, the security is part of the visitor experience. So, you know, are they able to answer questions? You know, are they okay with taking their picture with visitors? You know, it never surprised me how many people from out of town in particular would want to get their picture made with one of the Alamo Rangers with their cowboy hat on. Because it just, if you're from Minnesota or whatever, I'm sure it seemed like this is quintessential Texas, right?
It's like exactly what I thought it would be. You go to Buckingham Palace and there's the guys with the big hats.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah.
And they were there at the site for over 50 years and did a great job. And so I had hoped that there would be a smoother transition than my understanding of how it all happened.
All right. Okay, we got a bunch of people on the board. We're going to get you on the air as fast as we can when we come back from the break. And you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. Kate Rogers, former president, CEO, Alamo Trust, will be here to take your calls. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Kate Rogers, former president, CEO of the Alamo, is here. 833-877-8255. Let's go to Steve on the phones. And let's get Steve. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi. I was on earlier, and I appreciate that I got through all right. A point I wanted to make, maybe she could forward this to Dan Patrick. The Battle of the Alamo was in revolt of a president who became president of Mexico and then immediately declared himself a dictator and then trampled on their constitution in 1824. Anything sound like history repeating itself?
All right. Well, Steve, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Now let's go straight to Mike. And Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. I wanted to compliment Kate Rogers on standing tall and kind of not just accepting the fate that Dan Patrick dealt out, and say that's in total opposition to the opposite of what Dan Patrick did. When somebody gave him this information on Miss Rogers, instead of looking at it as somebody doing a hatchet job on her, he just overreacted and decided that she needed to go, and was not being courageous and not, you know, he was more like during the McCarthy time when people's reputations and careers got damaged just out of because of a bully mentality from that era that we now have. And I appreciate that Kate Rogers has the courage to stand up for herself and really for others. And I'm disappointed that folks like Dan Patrick basically lacked the courage to do the right thing. They took a weak way out just to appease the base.
All right, Mike, thank you for that. So there have been three active fundraisers on the board of the Remember the Alamo Foundation who have stepped down because of what happened to you in protest. Philip B. Backey, Tracy Wolf, and Donald G. Cook have all stepped down.
Yes.
So you have some high-level supporters telling this they're not in agreement with this.
Well, I think it goes back to the comment from the last caller. Situations like this can be quite character revealing, right? Because, you know, I think you have a choice. People have said to me, you know, we didn't have a choice. I think you always have a choice. The choice isn't always easy, but you know, who are you going to be in that moment? And will you choose to take a stand? The defenders of the Alamo certainly did.
With their lives out there.
With their lives. And so, you know, but if someone is more concerned about their next political appointment or, you know, losing favor with some of the state's elected officials, you know, they're going to choose the easier path. But there were certain people, like the ones that you mentioned, that just said, this isn't right. And we're not going to just stand by and let this happen.
Let's go to Bill. Bill, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
All right.
This debate reminds me of the discussion that we had several months ago when we were talking about how the Texas mythology has been expanded on and taken over by people for reasons we don't all approve of. And I had the privilege of speaking on that day. Today I wanted to talk about Dan Patrick, the carpetbagger, and the reconstruction of Texas history. You know, Dan's not from here. He wasn't educated here. He doesn't have, you know, he has his history here, but it's never been a Texas-centric history. It's always been about him and what he wants to do and what he wants you to believe. When he was a talk show host on the radio, and now that he's an active participant in the culture wars, history doesn't mean a damn thing, Dan Patrick. He's come in, he is part of the group that is hijacked our narrative, hijacked our history, and is using it for their own purposes. I mean, the Texas mythology is worth a lot as far as publicity goes. You can bring a lot of people together over the idea of, you know, valiant frontiersmen, you know, fighting against the elements and the odds and all that kind of thing. But this is all about Dan Patrick. This has nothing to do with history or what we need to know about ourselves and how we need to think about ourselves. And that's, you know, and thank you guys for bringing this to light and getting it out in the public.
Well, thanks for your call, Bill. I'm going to go straight to another caller, Randall. And Randall, you're on the air. No, let's go to Martha. Sorry about that. Martha, go ahead. Martha.
I would like to ask, if the term indigenous people isn't allowed anymore, what is the allowed term?
All right. And you said American Indian before?
Yeah. So it was interesting because when we were having this debate, to your point earlier, there were, you know, Native American, whatever you want to call, there were people here for
but
thousands.
But they weren't American.
They weren't American because there was no America. And they were here for thousands of years. To be clear, even in Texas, right, yeah. Some 10, 12,000 years that they lived here before the first European colonizers arrived. And I'm going to say that word because for today I can. And the term that's being used right now is American Indian.
I just think that kind of, like you said, there's some baggage with that. I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think it really tells the story. Indigenous, native peoples. I mean, I think those are better terms.
Well, it's a question about, you know, how honest about our history are we going to be? Look, I love this country. I love this state. I grew up here. But that doesn't mean I can't look honestly at the parts of our history that are not great. You know, I don't think that in Germany they shy away from teaching school children about the Holocaust, nor should they. You know, I know for a fact they go to visit concentration camps.
We have to teach about enslavement.
We have to teach about enslavement. We have to teach about the Trail of Tears. We have to teach about the parts of our history that are messy, and be honest about it, and not try to sugarcoat it, if you will.
Yeah. Another caller, Randall. Randall, now you're on the air. Go ahead.
All right. That's all right. Let's remember, this episode began with a professional pot stirrer and propaganda peddler masquerading as a journalist for this propaganda site called the Texas Scorecard. It's like a mashup of Fox News, Nick Fuentes, and Perez Hilton. This grade school tattler read Miss Rogers's Indigenous People's Day post and ran at breakneck speed to Texas Land Commissioner Don Buckingham. Teacher, look at what the nasty woke liberal lady posted. This has nothing to do with history or dissertations. This has to do with a propaganda peddler trying to score brownie points in Austin. That's how it started. And I think we need to remember that.
All right, Randall, thank you for that. So does it matter that it was a right-wing activist who started, you know, this fight?
Well, I think it's telling.
And
I
mean, if you look at everything else that he's involved with, you would realize this is a guy of poor character.
That's not for me to determine, right? But I will say this, right? This term woke, you know, so there was a caller earlier who read, you know, who talked about the McCarthy era. This is quite similar, right? If you get labeled as woke, you know, that means you need to be banished. And there are people out there, like the one being referenced, who are just looking. And there is a list. I know for a fact there's a list of people that they're after for being woke. And again, I'll go back to the fact that this is a constitutional case. Anyone out there, whether you're in public radio, a public university, the public sector in any way, should be very concerned that an elected official could go find something that you wrote however long ago and use that as a weapon to label you a certain way and call for your termination. These are people's livelihoods we're talking about. You know, to get tossed out on your ear like that. Because
but it's creating this atmosphere of fear.
Of fear.
You think about it. If you're afraid to speak out, then this is not freedom. Period.
No, and even to your point, we talked about earlier about the people who chose to resign from the board and those who didn't. If we don't think that fear plays a part in that decision, we're being really naive. People are afraid. Well, what will happen to me if I speak out?
So what's happening now with your case, your lawsuit against, it's against the individuals of Dan Patrick and Don Buckingham, right?
It's all of the above, right? It's all of the players who were involved in calling for my resignation, including the board of the trust. But it is a constitutional case. And what that means, unfortunately, in our legal system, is that means long. And these are elected officials who enjoy certain indemnities that you and I as private citizens do not enjoy. You know, so they've already prolonged any response. You know, it was filed back in November. They still have not responded. They have to next week. I can only imagine what kind of rhetoric will be in whatever response they put out there. And then I can only imagine they'll try to delay because they can.
So you're anticipating some ad hominem attacks on you as
yes.
a person?
Yes.
And so let's be prepared for that and recognize where this is coming from. You know, this is we should be talking about freedom. We should be talking about protecting our history and having an inclusive history because it belongs to all of us.
And that was what we wanted. I think as it relates to the narrative at the Alamo, our singular goal was that for anyone, adult or child, visiting the Alamo, that they see themselves in the story, period.
In a positive way.
Yeah.
Or in a way that, you know, it's not about you. Your relatives, your ancestors didn't kill Davy Crockett. You know, this is a story. It's important. It's history. But let's tell it and share it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Kate Rogers, for coming in today and talking to us. Really appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.